God gave Brittany Moses a passion for studying psychology and a keen curiosity for why people's brains are strongly affected by their environment. Her podcast and blog receive millions of visits from people hungering for hope amid mental health angst. I'm Kendra Semin. Stay tuned to hear Brittany explain the key takeaways she's received from professional mental health counselors.
God's word promises in Proverbs 3:6 that if we acknowledge Him in everything we do, He will direct our paths. This statement holds true not only for America, but also for our daily lives. The gospel message is simple. Put God first in everything you do. Matthew 6:33 and Luke 10:27 say this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." And lastly, fulfill the Great Commission. Mark 16:15 says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel," that is, the good news, "to every creature." If you want to see America continually blessed, now is the time to step out in faith and spread the good news. This is faith in action. Wherever we go, every faithful Christian is compelled, through obedience to Jesus, to share His simple three-step gospel message all across our land. For more information, please go to the website at www.putgodfirstamerica.com. That's www.putgodfirstamerica.com.
Welcome back. Today I'm here with popular blogger Brittany Moses, who has also got her own podcast on mental health from a Christian perspective. Brittany, we're so excited to have you on today's episode.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here with you guys.
Yeah, we're honored to have you too. You have so many visitors to your blog and podcast. And so, you know, we both are kind of on the same page. We want to spread this word and for mental health. So is there anything about yourself you'd like to share with our listeners so they can get to know you a little more before we get started?
Sure. So I'm currently in California. I'm a West Coast girl. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, Los Angeles native, and I'm in the study of psychology at UCLA and research assisting at UCLA's Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior. So that's been a really great experience. And certified to facilitate recovery support groups for those living with a mental diagnosis. And that's with NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness in my city. So just kind of having my hand in different places as far as mental health work and kind of advocacy. And I'm also a believer, so there's that whole integration. I really got all of my start in this whole faith and mental health thing in the church, because I was born and raised in the church. I was the church kid running through the pews and, you know, fell away in my teenage years, made a hard comeback after having my son, and was serving in the church and ministry for some years and different church plants, you know, and just kind of moving different places. And what I saw time and time again were people who were coming to church, you know, being baptized, born again, coming to Christ, but still blockaded by these hurts, habits, hangups, traumas, you know, and just really seeing, okay, there's more dynamics going on here, and I want to understand what those dynamics are. And you know, just throwing myself into learning and even self-educating both the human experience and the spiritual experience and how those connect. Because we think about it, you know, Jesus was 100% God, but He was also 100% man. And we see that even He still had the weight of enduring the human experience, you know, like Isaiah 53 says He was despised and rejected by man, a man of great sorrows and acquainted with grief. And so, yeah, just understanding that we have a lived experience along with our journey through through the faith, and I want to see people show up for their lives and where God has called them by addressing some of these maybe misunderstood and seemingly gray area issues when it comes to mental health.
That's really good. And you mentioned growing up in church. Did you notice kind of a stigma surrounding mental health in Christian circles?
Well, not so much as a kid, because I was really, really young, but more so when I came back and I was serving. I just noticed that it was misunderstood, and I think that's where the stigmas came from. They came from assumptions that faith and mental health was kind of mutually exclusive, right? Like, you either have Jesus or you have illness, so to speak, you know? And so I think that there just wasn't a lot of language around it or how to approach it. So it created a lot of assumptions about people, where people were, both in their faith and in their character, which, you know, that has not a whole lot to do with their mental health. That's a separate issue. And so I think just in my experience in the past, and I did it too, because I didn't really understand at the time, jumping to kind of these black and white conclusions, right? We're kind of really good at that, because we want to be the fix. You know, you're sitting with someone who's hurting, or you're hearing someone's problems, and in that moment, for some reason, we take on this savior syndrome where we feel like all of a sudden we need to have the answer, we need to have the right scriptures, we need to point them to the right verses and answer them right then and there. And we just have, I think, a hard time sitting with the unknown, kind of a fear of it, also like discomfort of kind of sitting with that, you know, I don't really know all of what's going on with this person right now, but I'm going to pray with them in support and try to get them in the right direction. And that's okay. And being okay with that.
Yeah, really good points, because it's really not a black and white answer. Everybody's different. You know this, being in school and being around so many people and hearing so many stories. It could be that people are just living in fear and not trusting God enough, or it could literally be a chemical imbalance. So it's not something where it's like you have a straightforward answer all the time for everybody. You have to spend a lot of time with that person, really get to know that person. They need professional diagnoses sometimes. Sometimes they may even need medication. And the fact that some churches look down on that is, I think, a really big issue, because so many people are getting shoved away when really the church should be accepting them in and helping them through it. So, yeah, I was even reading research from 2014 by Lifeway that said 27% of churches have established plans to help families affected by mental illness. That's a really low amount, 27%. Yeah. And it says that two-thirds of religiously observant Protestant Christians with depression reported wanting their churches to speak openly about mental illness, but only 66% of pastors said they spoke to their church on the topic once a year or less. So obviously there's a gap there. We have people wanting more talk about mental illness by pastors in the church, and we don't have that, and churches need to be more prepared. And so that's what we're here to do. And I'm sure your mission with your podcast as well, it's like, okay, there's this problem. How do we spread awareness about it? So thank you for sharing that. And I was also reading on your blog that you, in kind of diving a little more into your personal story, you said that you had to put up emotional boundaries to help prevent yourself from codependency and things like that. Could you expand on that? Like, if not depression, was that a place of anxiety for you?
Right. I think it can create that place. And I know what you're talking about now that I'm thinking about it. It was my blog post on codependency and struggling with that, which I'm actually doing a presentation on a little bit later. So this is so fitting. But yeah, codependency is something that I think just a number of people have struggled with. And it's not, you know, clinically diagnosed or like in the DSM-5 or anything, but it does have characteristics of just enmeshing with people, kind of an abandonment of yourself, and this like fear of people pleasing, and having a hard time separating your thoughts and feelings and convictions from those around you. And, you know, there's so many reasons for this, right? Like, either there could be a background of trauma and abuse where you were just kind of taught experientially as a child that your thoughts, opinions, your emotional matters did not matter as much as the person who was violating you, right? There's especially if there was substance abuse in the home, you know, where maybe a person had to caretake and a child who should have been a child had to be an adult, right? And taking on those issues and responsibilities. So anyways, wrapping all of that up to say, you know, I think it's easier to create physical boundaries and say, okay, this is a toxic situation. I'm going to separate from this, or I'm going to kind of take space from this person, or, you know, not go to these places or whatnot. But emotional boundaries are harder. To be in a situation where you're around people and, you know, not take on their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, and separate yourself and be like, well, these are my convictions, you know, say someone speaking negatively about someone else to you in a workspace, you know, just being able to sit there and go, that's interesting. Well, that's how they feel, but that's not necessarily how I feel. And just the whole idea of, you know, that you are a separate individual. God has created you as a separate individual with your own thoughts, feelings, emotions, convictions that should be respected, and being able to tune into those so that you are on track with who He's called you to be, in all of that. So that's kind of what that blog was about.
Yeah, that's really good. That actually reminds me of being a customer service rep when I would get the most angry customers and they would raise their voice at me, you know, over something that I couldn't even control. It wasn't really my fault. And I would just have to keep my voice calm and respond to them in, you know, the best way I knew how, the most polite, most respectful. And I think about what you're saying and I'm like, wow, it's almost the same thing.
It is.
You have to plan ahead to respond a certain way when you get those kinds of people yelling at you or getting angry at you. And I find that it's the hardest, at least for me, within my family, because we know each other so well. And, you know, we're just kind of like, oh, we can say whatever to each other and it doesn't matter. But no, like family, friends, even the words can hurt harder because they're close to you. They're your loved ones. And I think that we need to be more aware of these emotional boundaries that you're talking about, because like when your parents or when your siblings or when your best friend like starts yelling at you, generally you want to get angry back and you want to defend yourself, or you want to do this or that. And then that messes up both of your days and maybe mental health, and, you know, depending on the person, how vulnerable they are. And it's so powerful. Words are so powerful. I think that we underestimate how powerful they are. And so many people, they don't think about having a filter, you know, like there are so many things we have to say, but so many things that we should not say. Because I know for me, at least going back to my middle school years and the bullying and all that, it was mostly emotional and mostly verbal that I dealt with that really led to a long time of healing from that. Really, really good notes on that. So in all your interviews with mental health professionals, what are some key takeaways that you've learned? Because you've talked to so many people from grief to PTSD to depression, you know, what are some main takeaways that you got from some of those?
That's a great question. And it's really cool because obviously I'm in this educational journey, but I almost feel like I have this supplemental educational journey, even through these podcasts of interviewing people, where I'm gaining all this collective knowledge from these different fields. But I think one of the big takeaways that stood out to me, let's say last week, I interviewed a friend of mine, Dr. David Pewter. He's a psychiatrist, and he was talking about the extremities of suicidal cases and people who just seem beyond help because they have complex trauma and all of these things. And what he said was that, you know, what he's learned throughout his, you know, medical journey is that no one is beyond help as long as they're willing to put in the healing work. Like, you can take the worst case scenario where someone does have complex trauma or does have suicidality or is in the depths of depression and isolating themselves and withdrawing. And with the right help and treatment, their life can look completely different, you know, than where they've been. So I think that's really cool because, you know, when you talk about diagnoses and disorders and whatnot, we don't really like those terms in illness. But the redemptive side is that there is hope. Like, there is help. There are treatments today that can help get people unstuck, whether it is talk therapy or medication, and those two together have proven to be the most effective forms of treatment, and especially if it is, you know, a brain disorder. So I think that's amazing that we have this, we understand mental health more at a point today where, because now we can see the brain, right? Now we have technology. We are at a point now where we can actually really help people and heal people. I think another big takeaway through all of them is that compassion and empathy have a huge effect size when it comes to the healing and recovery of others. So just being compassionate and empathetic and being at a place to actively listen where people are, something that we kind of often do in the church is we like to tell people where they are. And instead of asking people, like, where are you? And I think that concept is more biblical than not, because we look at the garden, right? And when Adam and Eve were hiding, and God didn't say, there you are. He said, where are you? Where are you? And I think that's really cool, because obviously God is sovereign. He knows everything. But it, then it makes it, you know, calls into question, you know, you could see it as God is saying, like, where are you right now? Where are you mentally, Adam? Where are you spiritually? Like, what's going on? You know, where are you? And being in that place for people, just meeting them where they are, is incredibly healing.
That's a really good point. It reminded me of something that I've heard where people say, don't tell someone necessarily that you understand, because everyone is going through something so different that, you know, you may have gone through something similar, and that's why we're sharing our stories, right? So that other people who may have gone through something similar can still find comfort in that. But we're also very different upbringings, different, you know, brain composition, different way that we intake information and respond to it, that we can't ever fully, I don't think, understand someone's unique trial or situation. Mm-hmm. So like you said, meeting someone where they're at, just saying, hey, like, how can I serve you? How can I pray for you? What can I do for you? Because, you know, maybe you can share, you know, how I have been through something really hard too, but still, I don't fully understand what you're going through. So yeah, being empathetic. Yeah. And then you mentioned finding, you know, help when you need it. So how do we find good help? Because I know that the mental health care system can be very confusing to navigate. Yeah. I'm sure a ton of, like, parents, even with kids with struggles, they struggle, I'm sure, to find, you know, especially a Christian psychiatrist or mental health counselor. Have you had any experience, like, searching those out, and any advice on how to find a Christian psychiatrist, things like that?
Yeah. So now there are actually some Christian directories that are online, which is really cool, because I feel like that didn't exist like years ago. Even Focus on the Family has a Christian directory for mental health professionals. And I can absolutely provide you the links to those for your show notes. So even like Psychology Today has an option where if you go to find a therapist, you can filter for someone who's Christian. So there are definitely options to search that. Obviously, like, everyone has, you know, different insurance policies and whatnot. So maybe going through your insurance network and seeing, you know, what providers are available to you, and doing some searching for there. It is kind of a navigational process, just like finding any healthcare professional that you need for a certain specialty. But yeah, there are definitely directories and options now. If you're a student in college, usually some type of mental health services are covered by your student services. They usually have like a clinician on campus. And so it's ideal. Yes, it's like ideal to find a Christian therapist. You want someone who understands and aligns with your beliefs, right? But I will say, if you cannot find that and you are in distress, right, you're absolutely in need, or there's like a really hardcore case of suicidality and you've gotten to that point, it is better to just get help, right, than not, and then go about the details. Yeah, your life is more important. And the truth is that I believe in revelational knowledge, meaning that God has given, endowed human beings with the skills to help our fellow humankind, right? Like doctors, you might not, your Christian might, your doctor might not be Christian, but you know he can fix your leg. You know he can, you know, heal your broken bone. It's kind of the same thing in a way, especially if it's a severe case. They still have coping skills and effective methods of treatment that are proven to help. So that's more helpful than not.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our series on mental health. Tune in next time to the Charisma News podcast for more stories like these.